Welcome to the Legislative Update Program on 96.5, 100.9 WHPO. It's a pleasure to have me back in the studio again this week with our local representatives and our state senator, Whitney Westville. We'll start off our comments today with Senator Whitney Westville, who represents the 3rd District that includes Christian County, Caldwell County, and Todd County. Senator Westville, tell us a little bit about some of the concerns on your mind this week and some of the things you guys have worked on in the Kentucky State Senate.
Lawmakers returned to Frankfort on Tuesday to reconvene following our constitutionally required break during the short 30-day sessions on odd years. We immediately got back to work, passing House Bill 1, which codifies the income tax reduction from 5% to 4.5% that went into effect in January 1st, and then getting us to 4% effective January 1st of 2024. And of course, this is based on meeting specific revenue benchmarks. We're doing this in a responsible way and slowly taking our march down to 0% and moving away from a production tax and more of an emphasis on a tax on our consumption. Though it's important that we protect the essentials from low-income earners, this is going to help build our economy and, importantly, help us compete far better with Tennessee in all the ways that we aren't able to compete with them today. Along with House Bill 1, we passed House Bill 2, which provides $16 million to support the construction of the new Veterans Center over in Bowling Green. This has been the product of a number of years' work from a handful of legislators, and I'm glad to see that come through. And that was basically making up for the rising costs due to inflation on that facility. But we're glad to see that. I filed three significant pieces of legislation during this first week back. Senate Bill 99 calls for an oversight and a review of both the Western and Eastern Kentucky relief funds that the governor set up. You've seen the news, no doubt, that thousands of checks amounting to millions of dollars have been sent out in error to people that never asked for any sort of relief. In fact, people receive checks that don't live anywhere near the tornado areas in the west or the flood zone areas out in the east, but they've gotten those checks. The governor hasn't been very good at answering questions about how that happened. He's blamed FEMA, which has refuted that. I filed the bill to require the Public Protection Cabinet to answer a few basic questions about where the money has gone, and importantly, how they made decisions about how much money to send each person. Was there an application process? Who qualified? What were the qualifications and criteria? Who made those decisions? And was there a prioritization of distribution between folks? These are funds that were solicited by the governor and by all of us to try to help the people in need. It's disturbing that people that don't have a need and never asked for the money still got money with a nice note from the secretary and from the governor. It's particularly of particular interest with these funds is that the Constitution requires all money spent by the state be spent and appropriated by the General Assembly first. We want to make sure that there's oversight. The legislature has a lot of committees and review subcommittees for all the dollars that we spend that come through the state treasury. I think that we need that sort of oversight and scrutiny of these funds just to make sure we don't keep sending checks out that are going to people that don't need it. Because as we talk right now, and as you and I live here in our part of the state, we each still know people who are suffering from tornado recovery or people out west that are still suffering from East Kentucky flood recovery that still need the help. So we want to make sure that we're keeping an eye on that. The other two significant bills I filed this week both relate to privacy. Senate Bill 15, I actually filed the first week back, but it's starting to move forward. I hope to get a committee hearing when we return next week. But Senate Bill 15 is the Consumer Data Privacy Act. Only 5 or 6 states around the country have gotten a bill passed, and Kentucky continues to wait over the last couple of years for a bill to move forward. And I actually believe I have the votes in committee and in the Senate chamber, and I'm eager to see that happen so that we can get protections in place for all of us as we live and exist and do business and interact with one another in the world online. Our digital data right now in Kentucky has no state law protecting it or protecting us or giving us rights regarding our data, like the right to have it deleted, to opt out of targeted advertising and tracking. I think these are basic rights that consumers ought to have when they interact with things online. That's what Senate Bill 15 does. And then Senate Bill 62, I did file just this week, and this has been worked on for several months. Back in 2021, the Supreme Court issued a ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling that struck down an attempt out in California to have nonprofit organizations have all of their donors revealed. that would chill the donor process. People who donate to nonprofits ought to be able to do that anonymously and without Big Brother, without the government coming down and coming after them or accusing them or unduly scrutinizing them or harming them in some way. The Supreme Court struck down that California attempt as a violation of the First Amendment. Senate Bill 62 codifies that U.S. Supreme Court decision. When we return, there obviously continues to be a lot of focus on the juvenile justice issues that we're dealing with here in Kentucky, less from a policy standpoint with regard to public safety and juvenile justice policy generally, but more with regard to facilities and security. We continue to see breaches of security and breakdowns and failures of security because the DJJ staff in our detention facilities, whether they're in McCracken County, which is where all of Christian County and Trigg County folks send their kids and law enforcement take their kids, or over in Bowling Green or in Adair County over in Columbia, Kentucky, and in Campbell County and other places, we're seeing security failures repeatedly. And in the case of one young woman out in Adair County, a detained youth, a teenage girl, was sexually assaulted by some of the other detained youth. This is horrific. And at a most fundamental level, we have to keep those children safe when they're in the custody of the state. And we're not doing that. More to the point, the governor, despite our requests to do various things, is not doing that. He's moving slower than he should. We're trying to urge him to move more quickly to restore order, to get law enforcement physically there, to get behavioral health providers in for both the staff and the detained youth. But then we also have legislative obligations I think we should do and look at, and that includes whether or not we spend the money to pay those staff more. The executive branch has that money already and can allocate resources to make those increases for the entire Department of Juvenile Justice. So far, the governor's only proposed raising salaries for the detention facility side of the agency. Unfortunately, he's going to put that fire out by starting another fire on the other half of the department, because now you're going to have people who have master's degree education levels and have been working for the department for years, maybe even decades, making $10,000 or $17,000 less than their new GED equivalent counterpart that's working in the detention facility. That's a problem, and it's going to continue to erode what little morale is left in the agency. I don't have any confidence in the leadership of the department or of the Justice Cabinet here in Kentucky, and I've asked the governor to seriously consider a change of leadership. In the meantime, we're going to make do with what we've got, and hopefully we can enact legislation and provide funding if necessary to make sure the agency operates as well as it can be, as well as it can be operated. We're going to continue to keep oversight on it and ask for the Justice Cabinet to provide the information we need. As always, if you have questions from us in the legislature, don't hesitate to reach out. This is a short session, so we're coming up. We're done with almost the first third of the session. And if bills don't make it out of the chamber that they originate in over the next 2, maybe 3 weeks, it's probably not going to advance just because we just don't have that much time. February is the month to get legislation, more or less, to get legislation through the system. But we're going to be working hectically and feverishly to get that done, as many bills as we can on the issues that are of most significance. If you have questions, reach out to us. You can always call us at 502-564-8100. That's the main switchboard. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Take care.
We've been hearing from 3rd District State Senator Whitney Westville on the Legislative Update Program. Comments from 5th District State Representative Mary Beth Himes. Representative Himes, tell us about what are some of the things on your mind this week.
Thank you, Alan, for the opportunity to share a little bit about this week that we had in the legislature. We have 22 remaining days, legislative days left, because by law we are required to adjourn by March the 30th. But that should give us enough flexibility and enough time to get to a lot of the more important issues. We don't have to deal with redistricting this time or a budget, which has not been the case in the last 4 years. So I think it's going to give us time to get to some different issues. We did pass House Bill 1, which reduces the individual income tax from 4.5% to 4% in January of 2024. The measure comes just weeks after the tax was lowered to 4.5% January of this year. This should put an estimated $625 million in the paychecks of hardworking Kentuckians. It's just the next step in our efforts to eliminate the individual income tax entirely. We appropriated $16,630,000 in fiscal year 22-23 to the Department of Veterans Affairs for the construction of the Bowling Green Veterans Center. This will provide long-term skilled nursing care to our state's veterans in the western region of the Commonwealth, and it should create about 120 jobs. This is not new money, nor do we have to pull from the state's budget account. Instead, funding will be reallocated from money committed to build electric vehicle charging stations that are no longer necessary. I guess a lot of you have heard about the juvenile justice problems that we've had. House Bill 3 seeks to address the root cause of several of these issues. It makes parental cooperation a priority. If a juvenile fails to appear for a preliminary intake inquiry or fails to complete a diversion agreement as a result of a parent's lack of cooperation, the court-designated worker will make a finding that notes the lack of family cooperation. House Bill 3 also lays the groundwork for reopening a youth detention center in Jefferson County, which is needed very badly, and it will retrofit it with safety features and increase the capacity to 40 beds. The estimated cost of this project is about almost $9 million. Also, this is the first time since 1991 that the House has moved forward with an impeachment petition. Sections 66 through 68 of the Kentucky Constitution prescribe this process for the impeachment and removal of public officials and grant the House of Representatives the sole power of impeachment. Responsibility for trying the impeachment lies with the Senate, and the Constitution requires the concurrence of two-thirds of the senators present to convict and remove the office holder. In addition, the Constitution also prohibits an individual who has been impeached and removed from holding any office of honor, trust, or profit under the Commonwealth. While Goldie submitted a letter of resignation effective February 28, this is Commonwealth Attorney Ronnie Lee Goldie Jr., without the impeachment and removal process, he could still hold office in the future. A resolution calling for the appointment of an impeachment committee was filed in January as a result of his conduct and concerns of abuse of power and public trust. That committee met throughout January and early February, ultimately deciding to recommend Goldie's impeachment. The House voted unanimously to impeach Mr. Goldie. As the impeachment and removal process continues, the Speaker of the House must appoint a committee of House members to lay the articles of the case before the Senate. Only the Senate can remove Goldie from office. On Thursday, the Senate Education Committee approved Senate Bill 150, which strengthens parental engagement with their child's education. The measure requires that schools notify parents of all health services assessed by their children in school. Senate Bill 50 requires that schools give parents notice and an opportunity to review sex education courses and allow them to opt out. Under the provisions, neither the Kentucky Board of Education nor the Kentucky Department of Education can require or recommend a school district to keep information regarding a student confidential. As always, I'm here. You can get in contact with me on the LRC website. We have some busy days coming ahead. Lots of bills have been filed. Obviously, we're not going to get to all of them, but hopefully we can prioritize the ones that that will affect the most Kentuckians and what you all are wanting to see happen. Again, thank you, Alan. Contact me, please, anyone who needs my help. Thank you.
We continue with comments from 8th District State Representative Walker Thomas. Representative Thomas, talk about some of the things that are on your mind this week.
As we entered our second half of the session on Tuesday, we had quite a bit of new legislation that was actually filed. The only action that we actually voted on was the impeachment resolution of the Commonwealth Attorney Ronnie Goldie out of Eastern Kentucky. That passed unanimously and has been sent to the Senate for the next step. It's already hard to believe that we only have 22 days left before we actually end session and sine die. I think it's important to remember that this will be the first session in 4 years that hasn't been dominated by a budget, the pandemic, or actually redistricting. The Senate passed HB 1 this week, lowering the state income tax down to 4% starting January 1st of 2024. It's now over on the governor's desk, and it waits his either signature, his veto, or he can let it become law without signing it after so many days. We'll be hearing four bills in Tuesday's Veterans, Military Affairs, and Public Protection Committee, including one that passed the House last year 75-20, but didn't make it through the Senate. That bill was HB 153, which prohibits the enforcement of a federal ban or regulation of firearms and would go into effect immediately when it's hopefully signed by the governor. We'll wait and see if that happens. I've always said that we need to protect our Second Amendment rights. I always enjoy giving these weekly updates, and please reach out to me if I can ever be of assistance. Thank you so much for listening.
And we hear from 9th District State Representative Myron Dossett. Representative Dossett, tell us some of the things that you're working on this week.
On Friday, February the 10th, we finished our second week of the 2023 session. House Bill 1, that was legislation which we passed the first week of January while in Frankfort, and lowers the state income tax another 0.5%, passed the Senate and went to the governor's desk. We'll wait and see if he vetoes it or signs it. I would not be surprised if the governor does not veto this bill, which he's been prone to do in the past. This is a part of tax reform, something that I have been a proponent of ever since I was first elected to the Christian County Fiscal Court in 2002, and I'm proud that I have been a part of this process in Frankfort, and very proud of the fact that it was the Republican majority which has moved on tax reform, the elimination of the state income tax, and moving us to a consumption tax. We've had discussions this week concerning teacher retention. That was something that I was proud that I worked with Representative Walker Thomas last year, in which we created a cooperative agreement between Murray State University and our local school district to actually grow our teachers in home. And there are some other discussions of other ways that we can actually look at recruiting and retaining our teachers. Just like every other profession, we're having issues finding those to fill those spots. We are seeing a better an improvement here of late. We do have more teachers that have gotten into the pool of studying education in college and actually going into the teaching profession. And we're going to continue to work on that as we move forward. We are getting quite a few contacts from constituents and here in the district concerning House Bill 173 and House Bill 177, which uphold parental rights. That's legislation dealing with these issues that have come up from transgender, the situation where we've got some of our young people deciding whether they want to be called he, she's, or whatever other pronoun. And this just means that the parents are going to be involved in this and make sure that this is not just something within the school systems or we as a state having this go forward without parents being involved with their children. And so, like I said, we're being reached out to by a lot of local constituents within the 9th District have contacted me on both these pieces of legislation, and they will be looked at as we move forward. Personally, I'm going to be filing legislation later this week concerning property rights that will benefit and help individuals who own property and make sure that they're protected and not have issues come up when a tenant or a leasee has doing work where the property owner is obligated for something that they had not agreed on. And also, I'm going to be filing legislation this week which will raise the homestead tax exemption. This will be something that will help offset the issues that we're dealing with concerning inflation, especially for our seniors and those who are 100% disabled, something to benefit and help them, because we are dealing with this inflation issues, things that have been going since we've come through this COVID pandemic, and something each and every one of us are dealing with, whether we see it at the grocery store or as we have to repair or replace appliances or virtually anything we're seeing at the store. So happy to be able to work on that as well. We'll looking at another busy week coming at for our third week of the 2023 session. We've got quite a few meetings coming up, and be doing a lot of looking at information, things that we can do to benefit not only every citizen in the 9th District, but every citizen of the state of Kentucky.
You've been listening to the Legislative Update Program on 96.5, 100.9 WHPO. You will continue throughout the legislative session and bring you legislative updates from all of our local legislators. You're listening to the Legislative Update Program on 96.5, 100.9 WHPO. I'm News Director Alan Watts.